Live 95 is Cullman's independent radio. And now it's time for Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Cullman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Cullman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself, and no lawyer on this show actually helped write that disclaimer. And now, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Netherly.
Welcome back to another edition of Understanding the Law with Cullman attorney Melvin Hastings and special guest Sam McClure. Sam,
what's happening?
How are you, Sam?
Living the dream.
Glad
to be in,
man.
Cullman, Alabama.
Hey, there's no place like Cullman. Let me tell you that. Let me push your mic a little bit closer to you.
A little bit closer. Don't want to miss a word.
So like you come up here and hang out in Cullman a lot.
I come up here to look at the different shades of green in the grass. But whenever I come to Cullman, it's always greener, man.
Well, look, you know, that's just the way we are in Cullman. So where are you from, Sam?
I grew up just south of Dothan, but the McClures back to 1830 were dirt farmers in Troy, Alabama. Cut my teeth in Montgomery. Okay. Played some college football in Daytona Beach at a historically black college, first white running back in the history of the conference.
That.
Yeah, and then I finished up at Huntington in Montgomery. Went to law school in Montgomery. Met my wife there, and then about 2 years ago moved to Hoover, Alabama.
The big Hoover.
The Hoover.
No place like Hoover, is it, Melvin?
No place like Hoover. Go Mexico.
Well, you know, used to, they would all be on one corner, you know, so you could pull up in your pickup truck, and they would jump in. You could take them to work. Now, I don't know if they still do that, but at one time they did.
There are some outlier labor markets in Hoover.
Well, there you go. Nice, inexpensive labor sometimes. So Sam, you are ready to get into politics.
I am. Yeah, it's my first time. So I just, as a disclaimer, I have no previously contracted political contagious diseases.
Well,
so
that's good.
But you know, just give it time, everybody. Everybody. Yeah. So yeah, after it really just seemed like the first baby step in that process, Daryl. I cut my teeth in Montgomery. Had great experiences organically forming relationships with good people in Montgomery working in the legislature. I got to clerk at the Alabama Supreme Court and the Attorney General's office. And so it was really May of 2016 where we saw the Obama administration try to force down the state's throat this transgender sex policy in the schools. And I saw Alabama get within inches of biting on that. And I thought, I'm probably going to raise my children and grandchildren in Alabama. I've got to get in the game in some form or fashion and run for office. So.
Well, you know, in Alabama, we try to be for everything. Don't you know that?
Yeah, tolerant.
Goodness,
we want to tolerate everything except intolerance. You do not need to bring that. I will not tolerate intolerance.
Let me tell you something. Me and Melvin can get on the roll about Alabama politics and sit here all night long.
Well, good. There's been a lot to discuss over the last year, year and a half of Alabama politics.
We love Governor Bentley, I'm telling you. Do we ever.
Well, it's high cotton for political radio shows with our current political climate.
Well, look, it's just so crazy out there. You know, I mean, we can look at it, and we know that our state is broke all the time. We have corrupt politicians in Montgomery. It's nonstop. But yet we have the stupidity to go in and vote all these people right back in here. Mm-hmm. I just don't understand it. It's time to move some faces.
It is. Well, you know, we're actually at, you know, 2019 is Alabama's 200-year bicentennial, whatever anniversary. We were formed as a state in 1819. And we've got an opportunity where 20 to 30 legislators are deciding not to rerun for office. And so that should be a huge rallying cry to everybody in Alabama that cares about the future of Alabama. Now is the time to get in the game and make our 200-year anniversary a time where we take back the mechanisms of government from being used as a weapon to enrich the elite, which is just the way of the waters. Take it back from being a mechanism to enrich the elite. Let's use it as a microphone to speak for the weak. And we can do that in 2019.
So I want you to tell us a little bit about the Office of Attorney General. I think probably most people think that you prosecute Speaker of the House and maybe a couple of other little politicians.
Everybody that's in there.
Yeah, everybody that's in there. And that's about the only time they really hear the Attorney General. Maybe I think when the BP oil spill come in, you know, the Attorney General spoke up. But a lot of people, I don't think, realize what's involved with the Attorney General's office. Why don't you tell us kind of what kind of divisions they have and how
sure.
it works.
Sure. The Attorney General's office is a pretty fascinating position, because the leeway and the reach the Attorney General's office is in some ways is broader than our governor's office, broader than the lieutenant governor's office. The Attorney General's office is a constitutional office. If you look in Alabama Constitution, it's listed right alongside lieutenant governor, governor. It's in the executive branch, and its tentacles go into almost every executive agency. So now, why is Sam McClure interested in running for Attorney General? Here's a couple things the Attorney General's office can do that can really change the state of justice in our state. Number one, the Attorney General's office has the authority to investigate and prosecute to the fullest extent of the law these places in Alabama that profit from deceiving young parents into aborting their children. Take, for example, a woman like Gloria Gray. Gloria Gray is a name that everybody in Alabama should know. She runs the Tuscaloosa Abortion Mill, brings in about $2.3 million in revenue from killing 13 children every business day. That's intolerable. That shouldn't happen on our watch. And the myth of the day is that Roe v. Wade is the law of the land. Is anybody still buying that? I want somebody to call in and tell me I still buy that Roe v. Wade is the law of the land and we just can't do anything to protect babies. Nowhere in the U.S. Constitution did the states delegate the authority to the federal government to tie the state's hands and say what children you can protect and you can't. So we think the Attorney General's office can eradicate legal abortion. Guys, that's big.
It's huge.
That's huge.
And it just makes me sick to my stomach to know that things like that happen every single day. You know, let me tell you something. You need some protection, you know, during sex. Let's just call it like it is. Because if you are going to go out there and do that and kill a child, you know, I'm a devout Christian man. And it just irks me to know that people do that. And a lot of times they just, I mean, how many times have you seen people that probably done it multiple times?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's sad, and it doesn't solve anybody's problems. And I understand parents are in a situation where they feel like they have no other options and they can't parent. And I think the quote pro-choice people, the pro-aborts people, and I hope we get some that call in and say, well, what are you going to do with the babies after they're born? And if you can't take care of them, then what? Then you should kill them?
Exactly.
If you can't take care of
them?
We'll
find them a loving home is what we'll do.
Well, that's the second thing that I want to talk the Attorney General's office can do. So right now, currently in Alabama, there's about 4,500 kids in foster care. All right? Foster care. That means they enter the control of the state through DHR because they've been abused or neglected. And about 400 age out of that system every year with no permanent family to go home to for Christmas. The Attorney General's office has authority over the attorneys that should be advocating for those children's best interest. Every DHR attorney is an assistant attorney general. That doesn't need to be bottom tier representation. They don't need to have 100 cases so they can only spend 5 minutes before they get to court. That needs to be top tier representation, a top priority. If our government is not speaking for the weak, if it's not protecting the weak, then what purpose does it have?
Exactly.
Yeah. So we you know, Alabama, we need more foster parents to step up to the call and get in that game. You don't have to go to the farthest part of the darkest corners of our globe to find the craziest evil. And you guys are attorneys. You know this. You've seen it. I'll just give you one example of a foster child we know that came into care with 12 broken bones at 8 months old. He had a herpetic cold sore so bad around his mouth and esophagus that he had to have a feeding tube. Mm. This was all perpetrated, the most likely perpetrators. Nobody saw it happen, but an eight-month-old baby by this child's biological family. Now, you would think that child would never go back to his biological family. He didn't have brittle bone. You guys are attorneys. You know the insanity of the system is that child ended up right back with his biological family 8 months later. Did he stay with his biological family and get on his feet? No, just 2 years later, he's back in care, multiple broken bones, sexual abuse so bad that would make you want to vomit right now. And do you think, and you know what, the inertia of the darkness of the system is to put him right back with his biological family.
Wow.
So we have to, and you said Christian, Daryl, and I'll just take this back to a Christian perspective. And now, I know we've got different We've got the family domain, the church domain, and the government domain. We don't need one domain doing what the other domain does, but let's just take a lesson from the church domain. When James, one of the New Testament writers, he says, let me tell you guys what pure religion is. In James 1:27, he says, pure religion is visiting orphans and widows in their affliction and keeping yourself undefiled from the world. If you take out orphan care, care for the fatherless children, if you take that component out, you've lost pure religion. You go back, and that thread is all through Scripture. Isaiah, when he was speaking truth to the established injustice of his day, on the tip of his tongue, it says, hey, you've broken the covenant. You're going to get kicked out of the land. On the tip of his tongue, one of the things he said was, you have failed to seek out and make safe the orphan. We've got to make that a priority in our families, in our church, and to the extent that government wields the sword to protect these children. We need to make it a priority.
Exactly. I just see, and maybe Melvin agrees with me, sometimes it's like a huge circus out there. I mean, and I'm not going to sit here and bash DHR sometimes, but I mean, it's a crazy circle, and these kids are not getting the attention that they need to put them in the place that they really need to be at.
Yeah.
And it just irks me to no end. And, you know, a lot of people don't agree with me with how I believe, and I could really give a crap less.
Yeah.
So, because I'm looking at it from God's eyes,
mm-hmm.
which is the way that it should be looked at.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, question from the public. Can you make adoption easier?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Adoption can and should be easier. And for children that end up in the foster care system, so if a child comes into care, for example, at birth because the child had been forcibly subjected to heroin in their system, it's like locking you and tying you to a chair and making you take heroin. Some parents do that to children while they're pregnant. So that child comes into care. DHR should spend one year trying to rehabilitate the biological parents. That child is with a safe, stable foster family. If those biological parents if they haven't got a steady job, they haven't started passing drug tests, they don't have stable housing, stable employment, stable transportation, DHR needs to forcibly file and prosecute a termination of parental rights. Biological rights are important, right? But we have to be on the ball. This is called the Best Interest of the Child Act that I got the privilege of helping to draft and push back in 2013. It set the timeline at 12 months, all right? So we need to be aggressive with that. Then we need judges following this Best Interest of the Child Act. Also, have a hearing within 90 days of notice to all parties and then make a decision within 30 days. One of the biggest obstacles, and remember Nancy Buckner, the commissioner of DHR, as we sat with her and tried to work on this Best Interest of the Child Act, she said, and I agree with her, one of the biggest problems is judges just kicking the can down the road. You kick the can down. Well, let's continue for 6 months and see what happens. Let's continue. Before you know it, that child's been in care 4 years, and there's no permanency. That, you know what, for a one-year-old child to be in care 6 months is like half of our life.
Exactly.
You know, if you've ever had a job and you didn't know when you walked into work if you were going to get fired or not, what kind of emotional stress that causes you. Imagine not knowing what bed you're going to wake up in the next day. So these children need permanency. That's what we can do to make adoption easier and better. And honestly, here's a little current event. In Montgomery, one of the family court judges, Judge Kelly, who has been a huge perpetrator of this kick the can down the road syndrome, just recently had a JIT complaint filed against her. That's judicial inquiry. If you want to hold a judge accountable, you file a complaint with the Judicial Inquiry Commission, that same commission that wrongfully excommunicated Judge Roy Moore, but they're rightfully now they're taking up this case against a family court judge who keeps kicking the can down the road and delaying permanency for these children. So that's a good development.
Well, what kind of judge is she? I mean, come on. Let's just call it like it is. You know, we're here to protect, and that's the bottom line. So if you have that elected official job and you're not going to do it, and you're just going to let these children go through pure crap, I mean, I just don't even understand that. I don't even know why we have a judge like that for. I feel for these children so much, and I appreciate what you're doing as far as you running for Attorney General and getting involved in this, because it's something that we need every day, and probably a lot of politicians don't even look at it, mm-hmm. you know, because you know as well as I do, in certain topics, in certain areas, if it's money in their pocket, that's what they're willing to talk about, and probably this right here is probably not one of the top priorities.
Yeah, and that's and that. If I have a message, you know, one of the main things I would love to communicate to your listeners is now is the season to get in the game and run for office. If you want to run Republican or Democrat, I don't care. Speak for the weak. Take back the mechanisms of government. From this is, you know, I remember a U.S. representative in the 1850s. All right, made this observation with the federal government that the whole enterprise has become one mere money-making concern. It doesn't matter if you're Democrat, and back then it was Whig, that this greed politico, these few power players who understand how to manipulate government, they've just like an octopus wrapped their tentacles around both parties. So it's all about how can I get in the public pocket and get that tax revenue to me. And what we're seeing a lot nowadays is how can we create monopolies? We see this a lot in Alabama politics, and I think, you know, that was one of the issues you mentioned in the beginning. What can the Attorney General's office do? But addressing corruption is huge. You know, our Ethics Commission has, you know, it's tough. It's tough. You know, Stuart Tankersley is rolling off the Ethics Commission, and he did a 3-part series where he said, "Here's all the problems, and here's sometimes why the Ethics Commission doesn't work." The Ethics Commission is put in place by the legislature. All right. So it's either, if there's political corruption, it's either going to be addressed by the Ethics Commission or the Attorney General's office. We need an Attorney General's office. In my mind, if you think of a plant and you've got roots and fruit, all right, recently we've seen some good fruit picked off the tree, right? I'm glad Mike Hubbard was prosecuted. It sounds like that was the right thing. I'm glad Oliver Robinson, you know, was targeted. So Oliver Robinson was the legislator who took money for the EPA oil spill. These are fruits from the tree. This is good. This needs to continue to happen. But unless we address the root of the problem, guys, and you know this, unless we address the root of the problem, we're going to keep getting the same fruit. What about the guys that bribed Mike Hubbard? Where are they? I want to see them on the docket. The guys that bribed Oliver Robinson, the people doing the bribing, got to get convicted. We got to get them prosecuted, investigated. And so, I mean, we got to talk about that, the roots of corruption. And where are those roots of corruption?
And unfortunately, as you know, money talks, and these people just walk away and never even get a slap on the hand. And that's just the way it is. It's the way it's always been, but it needs to change.
Yeah. Well, maybe we come back from the break. We have introduced a plan to try to bring the Attorney General's office to a place where we stiff-arm the appearance of evil, even taking money from some of these people that are roots of corruption. They say, you know, I think if we stiff-arm that, if we say we have to be above reproach and avoid the appearance of evil, let's get off the merry-go-round. And so what, I mean, how much confidence does it give the people of Alabama? Would it give the people of Alabama to know that their newly appointed attorney general is taking money from the same people that were implicated in the Mike Hubbard scandal? Would that give us confidence?
Right. You're listening to Sam McClure. He's going to be running for attorney general for the state of Alabama. Sitting in with Melvin and Big D. So we'll come back in just a moment and tackle some more issues. You're listening to Live 95.5. This is Understanding the Law, Coleman's Independent Radio.
We've spent a lot of time on this. The investigation is finally over. We uncovered several leads, and we have finally found it. We have found what every small business in Coleman has been looking for. Fiber optic quality internet is here. Utilizing cutting-edge radio technology, Cyber Broadband is now able to offer fiber optic quality internet in the immediate downtown Coleman area and most Coleman industrial parks. More information is available by calling Cyber Broadband, 256-734-1077, 256-734-1077, or on the web at cyberbroadband.net. Hey guys, let's face it. We all want to look our best, but with minimal effort, right? Well, that's where Angela at Scissor Salon comes in. She'll get you looking your best, so you're always on top of your game. Walk-ins are always welcome. Scissor Salon, Highway 278 East, just past the water plant, 735-3089, 735-3089. Look for the big scissors on the roof.
Welcome back. Live 95 is Coleman's independent radio. You're listening to Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Coleman County.
If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Coleman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And now, once again, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Netherly.
Welcome back to Understanding the Law. Melvin and I have Sam McClure in studio, running for Attorney General. He has brought Mr. Big Wheel Jacob with him. But, hey, look. Jacob had a Yoo-Hoo, man. That looks so good. And I'm over here
Yoo-Hoo
with a...
Yoo-Hoo and Hardee's.
Yes, surprise. And I'm over here with water, Melvin. What's up with that?
And he's drinking in front of us.
Yes. Jacob is teasing me drinking the last drink of that Yoo-Hoo.
And a boo-boo.
Don't you wish you had one, Big D?
You know, Sam, speaking, kind of going in what you're, the area you're talking about, I don't think people realize... That the Attorney General, they're not just about criminal prosecution. They can also litigate civil cases. So for instance, you're talking about going after some of these guys and the money and what's going into this corruptness, which we'll get off of it in a minute. But you know, the Attorney General can file probably I would assume can probably file civil lawsuits and get the money back. You know what I'm saying, that they're spending on this type of stuff.
Absolutely, on behalf of the state, and there are attorneys within the Attorney General's office that are focused on that. That are when there's a civil infraction, there's a cause of action. Yeah, I mean that's representing the interests of the people of Alabama. The BP oil spill,
yes,
making sure that's handled appropriately and effectively. Those are issues that the Attorney General's office absolutely needs to be excellent on. Yeah,
you know, and when they're prosecuting some of these some of the big high profile companies or people or whatever else. You know, getting civil judgments against them so you can collect the money it costs to prosecute these people. It costs it costs a lot of money. I wonder how much it costs to prosecute Hubbard. I bet it was unreal.
I bet it was. I bet it was. And the Attorney General's office also needs to be concerned about conserving costs, too. I think There has been a problem with outsourcing too much of the work and you get mammoth legal bills, all right? I don't think that's serving the people of Alabama. I think there are some super fantastic, talented people, public servants in that Attorney General's office. We need to let them work. We need to let them do what they do.
You know, and the Attorney General, they also have the authority, I guess it's under some kind of a legislative act, to offer opinions to public officials and also they also have the opportunity to go to the legislature and work with them on some laws. And sometimes I wonder how much the Attorney General's office gets involved in the legislative function as far as, you know, when there's laws and there's stuff going through, I don't know that they probably shouldn't be a little more active in, hey, you know what, guys, this is probably borderline unconstitutional. Are we spending too much time on this? And where are we going on this? And for instance, some of these bills that these legislators like to pass to make everybody look good, and you know that the federal government's going to knock it down. Man, we pay out Southern Poverty Law Center. I wonder how much money they've made off the state of Alabama.
Oh my gosh.
They get $1 million. I mean, they get attorney's fees, $500,000, $1 million attorney fees all the time because they're fighting some of these bills that. You know, they're feel-good bills, but they're, you know, we know what's going to happen to them in the federal court system and stuff. So, you know, I think the Attorney General probably needs to be a little more involved in keeping up with the what kind of bills are coming out of the legislature. And then maybe even, like you said, what kind of bills are going into the legislature. Danielle had brought up during the break about the deal with adoption and maybe – you know, the cost of it, the ability to do it, you know, and all of that is something that I think the Attorney General's office can definitely be involved in.
Yeah, Attorney General's office is not the legislature. They don't write law, is not the governor. They don't sign it, but they carry a lot of weight in the legislature, and we need to make sure we have an active presence. That's kind of my fishbowl. I love to swim in the legislature. I've been thankful to have done work there over the last few years, lobbying on whether it's pro-life, pro-family, foster care reform. And so, yeah, I think we need a presence there. I think, you know, we can carry a lot of weight in things like Attorney General's opinions, like gun rights. Gun rights are important. And the Attorney General's, if there's a local sheriff who is maybe a little bit off the mark on wanting to be the only person in the room carrying a gun, I think the Attorney General's office can step in and say, no, we need to apply strict scrutiny to any action that would restrict somebody's right to carry a gun. And I think we can, one of the leadership areas that the Attorney General's office can help with that is to try to help a paradigm shift where law enforcement is encouraging people to carry guns. The most dangerous place in the community, you guys know, is where is this alleged gun-free zone, yes, where the law-abiding citizens are discouraged from carrying guns. So we need to make sure we push back against that. Adoption is something that I think we need to continue to talk about in forums like this. A lot of people don't know that it actually doesn't cost anything, nothing, to adopt a child out of foster care. The state actually reimburses up to $1,000 of your legal expenses. And my law practice is focused on adoption. It has been since day one. We adopted my oldest son, Jacob, who's here from the Hungarian foster care system when he was 3. I was in law school, and that kind of started getting me inspired in that. And so, yeah, so there's a $1,000 reimbursement, and you can go to a website called adoptuskids.com or .whatever. Another one is Heart Gallery Alabama, where they try to make videos of children that are available for adoption in Alabama. We need families to step up and help care for these kids. There are adoption granting organizations that can help people pay for it. Some people say, well, it's easier to adopt internationally than it is domestically. It costs less. In some ways, yes. Some ways, no. I think I would encourage people, if you feel like you're called to adopt from China, do. But if you've kind of got an open slate, let's look at the kids in our own backyard, and the kids in foster care, 400 age out. That means they turn 16, 17, 18, 19 years old, and they have no permanent family. There's a big need there, and I think we need to. The Attorney General's office can provide, direct. Let me put my finger on the button and make sure they get zealous representation and also leadership. We need to be talking about this and mobilizing the good people of Alabama, because that's really a family and a church issue. Are we going to visit the orphans in their affliction?
I can't imagine having a foster child and then they turn 18, they're out of high school, and they have nowhere to go. I mean, I can't even imagine that.
It happens.
And to know that we have a system that allows that, mm-hmm, because maybe I'm wrong, I don't know, but for me to be a foster parent, there's no way I could let my child, because that's exactly what I would call him or her, as my child, to go out into the world and not have a place to go. But I'm sure there's possibly that people do it every day.
Sure, yeah. And if you're a foster parent, say of a newborn baby that comes in, again, using this example, addicted to heroin, and that child's parental rights are terminated, as they should be if the parents don't get their acts together over a year, as the foster parent, you have the first opportunity to adopt that child. And that usually makes the most sense as far as bonding and attachment. A child's ability to attach to a primary caregiver is kind of foundational developmental issue that affects all kinds of other issues. And so, I'd really encourage people to, I've got a book out there called The End of Orphan Care. It was published last year, a couple years ago, that kind of gives a philosophical and theological framework to how to approach orphan care. If you look at the word that James used in James 1:27, orphanos is the Greek word, it really encompasses fatherlessness. And really, I'm thankful for single moms out there that are doing single parenting, but on the very least end of the spectrum, the reality is that just not having a stable father figure around, at the very least, subjects a child to being more likely to have developmental delays. The number one demographic on the other end of the spectrum, the number one demographic of children, of people in prison, is that they had no father figure. It's not race, it's not color, it's not religion, it's did you have a stable father figure around? So being, gang members. No gang member has a nuclear family. And this is actually an important issue that I think the Attorney General can provide leadership to. When I talk about criminal justice reform, all right, a lot of Republican candidates, I think, wrongly stiff-arm that issue. That's a Democrat issue. Don't talk about criminal justice. When I talk about criminal justice reform, I talk about getting off the addiction to federal money in areas like Lyndon Johnson's failed war on poverty. I think for maybe good intentions, the government started giving money to parents, the single moms that had kids and no father figure around. Now, what has that grown into? That has grown into a subsidy and an incentive to not have a father figure around. Now, many neighborhoods in our inner cities, 99% of the kids in the room will have no stable father figure around. My wife taught ballet at an inner city community center in Montgomery. She found that the 7, 8, 9-year-old girl's ambition in life was to get pregnant so they could drop out of school and draw a check from the government. We have to stop subsidizing fatherlessness. And that, when I talk about criminal justice reform, I think we need to provide leadership in that area.
You know, that, boy, that gets me. I always get fired up about the welfare stuff because, you know, it was set up as a temporary help for people. And like you said, there are people now, and there are, unfortunately, there are a lot of people, and it is young people that is their goal to get out, work whatever they got to get disabled or get on the system, and then just ride it.
Are you trying to get me fired up or what?
No, I'm just telling you, that's the truth. That's what I see. So, you know, it is the system. Somebody's going to have to step up and do something about it. And, you know, one good thing, there is a division of the Attorney General's office called the Medicaid Fraud Division, you know.
There you go.
And that's good. You know, that is a way to go out and fix a lot of this, because there is a lot of Medicaid fraud. A lot of Medicaid. I see it daily. I see it weekly. It's unbelievable. I see, because I do a lot of criminal cases, and I do a lot of custody cases too, whether it's attorney cases, juvenile, divorces, whatever else. And I see so many people that's got kids on Medicaid that the father's got insurance or this person's got insurance available, and they just abuse it like you can't believe. It is unbelievable. You know, and I guess, and Sam probably knows because he's been involved in the legislature, a majority of our budget, our general fund, probably goes to Medicaid, and that's probably the biggest expenditure, isn't it?
A lot. It's huge.
It is huge. You know, and it's, unfortunately, that is, it's abused.
I'd love the Alabamians. There's a, If you guys ever seen the movie Braveheart, and you know it's about William Wallace, the Scottish hero who fought the English tyrants, and legend has it that Robert the Bruce, the guy he fought with, scaled the castle of Edinburgh with five guys and took over the castle. At the base of that castle is a monument that says, "A true Scotsman gives up his freedom only at the cost of his life." And I just would like the people of Alabama to imagine a free Alabama that's not controlled by the tyranny of the federal government. That would require us to be financially independent from the federal government. When Mike Pence was governor of Indiana, he set up a federal funding accountability task force that evaluated every dollar that came into our state. The reality is that Alabama is addicted to federal money like a heroin addict, and it doesn't end up good for the state. There's a great report out there by Catherine Robinson called Selling Our Sovereignty that details how when the federal government offers money to the state, "Hey, state, if you do this thing, we'll give you $8 billion. You just got to raise taxes and match it a little bit." It ends up terrible for the state. It drives us into ruin. Most of ills in Alabama society, many, a jenga pin of dysfunction is that we're chasing federal money like a heroin addict.
You know, that was a big issue with all the Obamacare money and the Medicaid and all that stuff coming in, and you know, a lot of the legislature saying, "Hey, you know, Governor Bentley and everybody messed up. There was an opportunity. Look how much money we lost from the federal government." I don't think people realize that it's not like the federal government's just handing you money. There's strings attached to it, and like you said, a lot of time, them strings are not what we want.
Yeah. No, absolutely. You know? And things that really, and this was what happened in May of 2016 when Obama, the Department of Justice, released that transgender education policy, which, to speak hyperbolically, is basically if your daughter wears blue and plays with baseball, you might need to teach her she's a boy, right? But Alabama got inches away from adopting that, and the talk was, "Oh, we're going to lose what? We're going to lose federal funding if we don't do it." If you see a dumb ass doing something that's inexplicable, that donkey's probably chasing a carrot, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so that's how the federal government, entices all the states to give up their freedom through federal money. So what do we see this legislative session? We saw a data collection bill, part of the Common Core fiasco. But basically, the federal government is bribing the states with money to collect data on their citizens from kindergarten all the way through your workforce until you die. I have never seen a more Orwellian, you know, that's Orwellian data collection right there. And the federal government and the states are going along with it. There are politico greed, corruption, master manipulators of the mechanisms of government that try to push this legislation. They're in the business of pushing legislation like this to chase that federal money. It drives me crazy, guys. It drives me crazy. We got to stop it. We got to get off of that heroin addiction to federal money.
Good old Obama. He was a good character, wasn't he?
You know, and Thursday we have Stacy George coming in, don't we?
No, it's the show's going to be canceled.
He's going to be canceled.
We're doing high school football.
You know, Stacy, we had talked about, and he's involved in the Department of Corrections. Is he still employed? I can't remember if he's still employed as correctional officer or not.
So.
I know he has for a long time, and that is a big deal with him. And it is a big deal. We've talked, we've discussed it, Daryl, with the federal judge's order and, you know, about the how the prison systems are run, the overcrowding, the medical stuff, and it's going to cost the state a lot of money. And eventually, and as Sam knows too, eventually the feds is going to throw, there's going to be money thrown out there, and I guess we have to see, are we going to be gullible enough in Alabama to take that money and fix the problem, or are we going to find some other way to fix the problem inside without their help?
Well, I mean, we're just throwing money, you know, we're throwing money away every day. You know, and hey, it almost pays to be in prison, don't it? I mean, come on. I mean, these guys have really got it made. And that just ticks me off to no end. But the overcrowding is just, it's horrible. We have to prevent crime. I mean, we have to educate some people. Some people you're not going to educate. Okay.
Right.
That's just the bottom line. They have come up in a lifestyle that's all they know. And they don't want education.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to have any type of work ethic. All they want to do is go out there and gangbang, and that's it. Rob somebody, kill somebody. You know what? All my uncles and my daddy's in prison, so why shouldn't I be? Mm-hmm. But, and that's sad for a person, I don't care what ethnic you are, to be having that type of attitude, to know that you have no life.
Mm.
And our prison systems are so full right now. But, of course, you know, we will let some crazy people go out of prison sometimes. Probably like Obama did. I'm sure he let a few crazies go out. Probably even here in Alabama. I'm like, really? Yeah. I mean, you're letting some real idiots out of prison, and especially the worst ones. So rehabilitation is what we need. We've got to get a control of this. And I just hate that we spend so much money on the prison system, because half or more, three-fourths of these men should not be in there. They should be productive citizens. They should be taking care of their family. They should be godly men instead of doing the stupid crap that they're doing every single day. And other people look at it and they think it's okay, and it's not.
Mm. Well said.
All right, Big D's office rant until until breaks up. We have Sam McClure here. He's from Hoover, Alabama, with Jacob. Hey, look, how does Jacob like Hoover? Come on now, be up front.
You like fourth grade? Who's your teacher?
Miss Jones at Hoover School.
You can't beat a teacher named Miss Jones.
No.
Everybody probably had a Miss Jones for a teacher, didn't they?
Look, if I was Jacob, I'd be asking Dad to carry me over to the Galleria like every day. You know what I'm saying? Olive Garden next door. You're listening to Understanding the Law. We'll be back with Sam McClure here in just a moment.
We've spent a lot of time on this. The investigation is finally over. We uncovered several leads, and we have finally found it. We have found what every small business in Coleman has been looking for. Fiber optic quality internet is here. Utilizing cutting edge radio technology, Cyber Broadband is now able to offer fiber optic quality internet in the immediate downtown Coleman area and most Coleman industrial parks. More information is available by calling Cyber Broadband 256-734-1077, 256-734-1077, or on the web at cyberbroadband.net.
Are you having trouble seeing your computer screen? Are the traffic signs looking a little fuzzy? Are the things that you used to be able to see looking just a little out of focus? Dr. Wayne Fuller has been helping Coleman see better for years, and he's still located on 2nd Avenue between the Catholic Church and Highway 278. You can call his friendly staff at 256-734-1121, and they'll be happy to get you seeing better, whether it's with contacts, glasses designed just for you, or a low-cost alternative to LASIK. Again, Dr. Wayne Fuller is available at 256-734-1121.
Welcome back. Live 95 is Coleman's independent radio. You're listening to Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. a show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Cullman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Cullman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And now, once again, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Netherly.
Welcome back to Understanding the Law. We are with Cullman attorney Melvin Hastings and Sam McClure, running for Attorney General for the state of Alabama.
Sam, I am.
Now, look, Sam, we don't like corruption, okay? But if you get this and you're elected, Melvin and I would like to have some kind of little spot down in Montgomery. I'm just saying, okay? I don't care what you appoint me to.
Just quid pro something?
I'll take a satellite office in Cullman. I don't want to move to Montgomery.
Look, I want to go live in the governor's mansion or something. You know, appoint me something there so I can jump in that little concrete pool they got, you know.
The attorney general's office not even in governor's mansion.
No, it's right across the street.
Yeah, I said, find me something so I can go there.
It's not in the Capitol, nothing. You kind of, you don't want to live in 501 Washington Avenue.
Do they have a chef there or something in there in that little mansion?
Daryl, for you, we can find something in
there. See, look, I love you, Sam. I'm going to vote for you, by the way.
That's right. That's all you got to do. Hand out, get a vote.
Yes, yes.
Bernie had it figured out. He was that close, man.
Hey, Big D, I want to say something because, and I think, I don't know how much Sam has dealt with the criminal system or these people in juvenile delinquents. And I was thinking about what he said and the things you talk about. I'll bet it would be mind-blowing if you went back and looked at, over the last 10 years, all the people that are charged and convicted of crimes and all the ones that are in the juvenile delinquent system, how many of them really have a nuclear family? Mm-hmm. It would be mind-blowing.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
hey,
yeah.
Hey, I'm going to tell you. It is very rare that I have a married mom and dad in a courtroom with a juvenile delinquent.
That's unheard of.
When you know, a lot of these guys, when they get in trouble and you're looking at probation reports and everything else, mom has one address, dad has one address. Right. They don't know mom. They don't know dad. They're disconnected from their brothers and sisters and stuff. It's just... I mean, it really does go back to the father. It does go back to the father. It goes back to the family. And these, I don't know. Maybe these people feel like they're just thrown out to the wolves, and they just got to. Some of them are just evil people. They're criminals. There's no doubt they're criminals. I see them. I deal with them all the time. They're just pure criminals that just don't care about people. They don't have no respect for themselves. They don't have respect for people. They don't have respect for people's property. They're going to do what they can and try to get by with as much as they can. If they get caught, they don't care. Go to prison, like you said, for a few days, and they're out and doing it again. But there are a lot of these people. I mean, some of them, I do feel sorry for them. Like I tell all the time on the show, I know people want to throw them in jail. But I get to hear the other side of the story, and there are some of them that are just thrown out there to the wolves. And if you go back, like I said, if you go back and look, you'll see – early in their life, there's a lot of them that's been in the foster care system. A lot of them has been juvenile delinquents. You know, and I tell all these kids that gets in trouble that I represent in these juvenile delinquency cases, if you don't watch, you're going to end up in prison. And lo and behold, there's quite a few of them. I don't know that it's a majority, but there's quite a few of them. That's what to do. I see them. They like you said, they age out of the juvenile system, and next thing you know, they're in district court, circuit court. Jury trials for thefts and robberies and burglaries and stuff like that.
Well, you know, when you see these young men, repeat offenders, county jail, city jail, prison, and then you look at politicians that's out there doing some of the most insane things, they all have a connection. Mm. It's a lack of discipline. Mm. You know, that they probably never had discipline in their life. You have seen politicians that have made it straight to the top, lack of discipline, and that's exactly why they keep doing the things that they do. Why? Because I get away with it. So why am I stealing from this car again 2 months later? Why? Because I got away with it. Mm-hmm. I don't have any discipline whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So I may get my hand slapped. I may get 30 days in jail, but guess what? I'm going to do it again. It's a lack of discipline. And, you know, we sat here and we've talked about missing a father figure in your home. Let me tell you something. That's the most important thing. You know, I've listened to the whole women's lib deal back in the 1970s and this and that. Let me tell you something. The man is the head of the household. Bottom line.
Mm-hmm. Now, he takes a lot of responsibility, too. He's got exactly. The responsibility and obligations.
Exactly. And if that husband and that father is there in that home, that is your role, and you need to do it. Of course, I'm very happy for these ladies that do it on their own, and I hate that they have to do it on their own. Mm-hmm. Whether it's divorce, no matter what any whatever the reason is, but if you're a father, you need to give these children discipline, and let these gentlemen and these young ladies grow up to be respectable, not trying to draw a check, but be a part of society that they should be.
Yeah, and part of good governance, whether it's in the family or the church or government, is what Stone Cold Steve Austin used to say, know your role and shut your mouth. And the solutions we're talking about right now, these aren't government solutions. Government has fouled up the family and the church jurisdiction by getting involved what it shouldn't be involved in. When the federal government started dispensing out charity, it got way off track, and the trails came off the track because, you know, in the early New Testament church, the church appointed seven men full of the Holy Spirit and wisdom to dispense out charity. You're probably not going to find those same levels of qualification at the local food stamp office. And so we're talking, we got to cut off our addiction to federal money. And the church and individuals need to step up and say, all right, we can't do anything about the sins of the past and the brokenness of the past, but we need fathers to get involved with the fatherless children and pour ourselves out there, or else we're just going to get the same cycle of brokenness. One of the questions that I'm interested in, Melvin, what your thoughts on this is it seems like we spend a lot as a state, we spend a lot of resources on incarceration or criminalization for drug addiction. Do you feel like we're on the right track that way, or are there resources there that we can think about using in different ways?
That's probably 50% of my practice is criminal practice, so I deal with a lot of them. And of course, the majority, and you ask any judge in the state, they're going to tell you everything revolves around drugs. I mean, they do. They break in people's houses. They steal stuff. People get shot and killed over getting money or getting property, anything they can get their hands on so that they can fix that addiction. So I look at the bigger picture. Is it that good that you would go through, that you would take that many chances and go to prison over it? You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
I think to an extent it probably is for some of them, but I believe that there is a deeper, these people have a hole in their life. There's no doubt about it. I mean, to me, it's an easy fix. You go to a church and you listen, you know what I'm saying? And,
right.
And the preacher's going to tell you how you fix that hole. It's pretty simple.
Exactly.
It's a simple solution to me, but you can't get all these people in the church. You know what I'm saying? I think there are a lot of people, and I always say this, that has a mental, they have a hormone problem, they have a mental problem, they have something, they have issues in their life, and smoking that dope fixes it for them. I mean, it does. Smoking a joint fixes it for them, smoking that dope fixes it for them. That's the only thing they can go to where they feel secure. They feel that gets them away from reality, and that fixes it. So, you know, you throw them in jail for 10 years, I'm going to teach you a lesson. You ain't going to use drugs. You can go to jail for the next 3 years. You know what? When they get out, if they want to use drugs, they're going to do it again. So I don't know. To answer your question, I don't know that it helps. I think you send them to jail, you know, for some period of time, as long as it's just a drug-related crime. When they start breaking people's houses, then, you have to take it a step further. But I just don't know that we're not really looking at the problem. I mean, there are people, you know, and it may be, and here I go, I'm going to have some people saying yay-ha to it, but, you know, this marijuana oil and stuff like that, I know it's crazy, but maybe we need to really look at, not necessarily it, but maybe there's something about that stuff that can be used to help some of these people I mean, some it's controlled prescription, and it may help some of them. But I'm going to tell you, I deal with a lot of them. Just thugs. There's just people that are just thugs around, and you have to weed them out. You have to say, "All right, you're a thug. You go to prison, and you got some issues. We can help you out." You know, so I think it's something you have to look at. I don't know that you're. If they're not, they're only hurting themselves, and I may be off on this, but they're hurting themselves when they're doing drugs. You got to help them out, I think, but throw them in jail for 10 years, 3 years, 5 years. I just don't know.
I don't think it's helping, but it's wasting my tax dollars.
You know, they have a SAP program. They go to prison. They go through this program. They get a certificate, and then they get paroled out, and then they do it again. And I've always said this. Sometimes I think you – and I hear this a lot – sometimes I think you have to help these people, give them an incentive to do good. So, for instance, I get a conviction, and I see this a lot. I get a conviction, 5 years, I do everything I'm supposed to. I don't get in trouble. I hold down a job. I do whatever else. I think we have to be serious about looking at taking care of pardoning that crime or doing something to get it off the record so they can go back to jail. I mean, they can go back to work and not have it on a record, because I have so many people come to my office and says, "Man, look, I can't, you know, I get in trouble. I can't find a job. I can't do this." Now, some of them are using it as an excuse. I know that. I can figure them out. But there's a pretty good percentage that needs some incentive hey, you know, if I do right, I do my probation, do everything else, this thing ought to be wiped off my record. So what does it affect you?
You know, I don't think I have a problem with that. Yeah. Somebody that really wants to succeed in life after being in trouble, I don't have a problem with that.
There's a few of them. It's not going to be a bunch of them, but there's a few of them. But you know, that may keep that person out of going to death penalty later on. Because, I mean, these people that's on death row, and I know if you weren't in AG's office, you see them. These people that's on death row, that most of them's not just a one-time offender. These people's been offending, whatever else. A lot of them takes that up. You know, they're going to get money. They're going to go get money from the drug, from somebody owes them some drug money. They're going to go rob a little convenience store. They're going to do something to get some money for the drugs. Somebody pulls a gun, they get shot, and then next thing you know, they're looking at the death penalty. So
and sitting there for another 28 years.
Sitting there for a long time, yes.
Well,
sir.
I think we can take it's an interesting political analysis to look at states like Washington and Colorado, what they've done with marijuana law, whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing. They have had the courage to say, federal government, you have no place to dictate what is a state's rights issue. The state's delegated power to the federal government, and the 10th Amendment says you only have those powers that we specifically listed out. All the residue is reserved to the states. The federal government has no place telling the states how to regulate plant growth, drug growth. The same is true in the issue of protecting unborn life.
Yes.
Preborn children. We are asking the governor, the attorney general, everybody at every elected official in Alabama, don't say that you have to wait on Roe v. Wade. We want you to have as much courage as the pot smokers did in Colorado to defy the federal government. We want you to have at least that much courage. And I don't mean to minimize that issue for people with medical issues that marijuana helps. At least have as much courage as those folks, the courage to defy the federal government and protect the 16 babies that are murdered every day in Alabama. That's happening on your watch. You got to quit it with this cop-out line. I'm pro-life, but I got to wait on the federal government to overturn Roe v. Wade. It's just a myth, and we got to get out of that.
And, you know, I guess what you're leading is somebody's got to start prosecuting these people. Is that what you're leading?
Yeah, I mean, the attorney general, I think, can eradicate legal abortion by strictly prosecuting the current regulatory scheme. Things like health code violations. Watch them like a hawk. You know, the attorney general can set up an investigatory team that's all they do is run these people out of town. And also, the attorney general can work with the legislature to remove the abortion exception out of the homicide statute so that people who profit from killing children get prosecuted for murders. Man, that sounds crazy talking Coleman, man, but that sounds crazy because we've been like a frog in water since 1973, living under the tyranny of a federal invader. A foreign government has said, we won't let you protect children from murder. That's crazy. What if I want to open a business let's call it Convenient Parenthood, and I'll drown your child for you up until that child reaches the age of 3. Is that crazy? No, that's bad. What about 2 years old? What about 1 year old? What about 1 day old? What about 1 day before the child's born? Look, I know the abortion issue is a hard issue to discuss, and if you've been down that road, I am no better than anybody. I've lived a lifestyle where that could have happened in my life, and the only place to go to for atonement is Christ. And I encourage anybody, if your conscience is pricked, to turn to Christ. Otherwise, you've got to build a false worldview and prop up some lie. Don't lie to yourself. Let's call it what it is, and let's move forward with courage to do justice for these children.
You know, and one other thing the Attorney General's office do, and we do it. We do it some in Alabama. I don't know if we do it enough, especially on the big topics. But, you know, when these cases are in front of the Supreme Court or they're in front of these federal courts, you know, the Attorney General can intervene in these cases and file amicus briefs and stuff and stand up. You know, when we got these federal cases that are dealing with the whether it's the Ten Commandments or it's the abortion issues or guns rights or whatever else, and you got these different circuits that's issuing these opinions and they get appealed to the Supreme Court. You know, our Attorney General's office, they're the ones that files the briefs in them. You know what I'm saying? So, hey, this is the way it is in Alabama. This is the way we look at it, you know. And your ruling, Supreme Court, does have some effect on us. You know what I'm saying? And we're going to stand up to you. Yeah.
And if somebody sues the state of Alabama for protecting babies, they sue us in Judge Myron Thompson's courtroom, who's built the pro-life box in Alabama. I think the Attorney General's right response is, let's just say the governor decides we're going to apply Alabama pro-life law, we're going to ignore Roe v. Wade. What should the Attorney General's response be to Judge Myron Thompson? I think it should be this. One sentence with a semicolon. Thank you for your interest. You don't have jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Drop the paper and then walk out. And let's let that be the response to the 11th Circuit and all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. Thanks for the interest of France, Canada, and Mexico and Alabama's sovereign issues and the federal government. Yes. Have a good day.
Well, Sam, we have about a minute left in the show, so tell Coleman why we should vote for Sam McClure.
And when we should vote.
Coleman, Alabama. Yes, yes. Well, first, you should vote in the U.S. Senate race. Roy Moore's got my support. I think he's a good man. I want to see him do good things in D.C. with his team. That runoff is September 26th. And after that, I want you to start thinking about Alabama. June 5th is the primary. Vote Sam McClure for Attorney General to take back the mechanisms of government from lining the pockets of the elite, being a tool to enrich the elite. Let's take it back and let's speak for the week.
Excellent. Well, it's been our honor to have you here, Sam, and we hope you do very well. And I personally appreciate everything that you've spoken on.
Thank you,
truly.
Darren. Glad to be here. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. So this coming Thursday, the Big D Radio Show on Thursday is going to be canceled. We're going to be doing some high school football on Thursday. So you can catch us next Tuesday on Understanding the Law at 6 p.m. God bless you, and most importantly, God bless America.
Amen.
Broadcasting from the People's Bank of Alabama studio, from a transmitter as powerful as a hairdryer. Hey, we got it on high. This is Live 95, Coleman's Independent Radio. WRJMLP, Coleman.